No, it's moving now. It's moving now, yes. Okay. It's moving, yes. Right. And to pause it, what do I press? The big one. Just a short one.
I will address some of the issues, Chair, my board members will also come in to address more of the broader-based issues that have been raised. And then the CEO and her team will respond to the operational ones. Let me start with the perception question or issue that was raised by you, Honorable Manyosi. It is true that there is a perception. It is a perception that has a historical element to it. But as I said in my presentation, I want to think I have worked very hard to reduce the perception to what it was in 2001 when I started to what it is now. It is true that the biggest element in this perception is that when you say to an accused person, if you don't have money, you can't afford your own lawyer, there is another lawyer that is provided by the state that will help you, where you will pay nothing. We have socialized in such a way that we believe if you pay nothing for something, it's of less quality. It's a fact. And in this country in particular, Chair, the first time that an accused person says, I want a legal aid board lawyer, it's not the first time he appears in court. We've monitored the postponement record of cases in court. At the first time, when the magistrate tells the accused person who appears, say, look, you're charged with this. If you don't have money, you can have the following lawyer sent to you. And the accused always says, I'll find my own lawyer. It's only the third or the fourth, sometimes the fifth postponement, when the magistrate starts getting tough to say, now you must make up your mind, that they opt for us. This is fed by this perception that I was talking about, right, that a free service is not up to scratch. It is a perception. Chair, indeed, it may be suggested, and I've heard this too, that the quality of the work rendered by Justice Center lawyers is not up to scratch. Every time I've heard that allegation, Chair, I've challenged the people to say, is that a legal aid board specific problem or is that an industry specific problem? Because it is easy for people to focus on us as a legal aid board, particularly on the Justice Center model, because it is not a model that was welcomed by the private practice. It's a model that took work away from it. Mm. So they take every opportunity wherever they get it to criticize, even when it's not warranted. I think let's factor that in. I've participated in programs, I've phoned radio programs, where you have judicial lawyers phoning to say, I was in that court, the Justice Center lawyer didn't know what he was doing. I was in that court, the Justice Center lawyer didn't know what he was doing. But when you go to the magistrate, I meet with the magistrate, I meet with the judges, because I take this job seriously. I hear different comments. They would rather prefer the Justice Center lawyers appearing in their court than the judicial lawyers. Because they know that if a Justice Center lawyer doesn't come to court, they know who to phone. They'll phone the Justice Center executive, or they'll phone the ROE, and there'll be corrective measures taken. So that's just by way of introduction on this perception issue. I think it's an issue that we will have, we will continue to have, but we continue to, when we engage with stakeholders, particularly in community forums, we continue to engage them, to make them understand. I think the other aspect of this perception chair is, in some community forums, we are accused of fueling or aiding or even encouraging people to commit crimes because we will defend them. I think that's one issue that we also need to be alive to. Because they say, if people know that they will have lawyers representing them at no charge, they will have the incentive to commit crime. It is not true. It is simply not true if one looks at the reception cost. If we were doing that, and that's how community was viewing what we were doing, they would opt for legal aid board lawyers as the first time they come to court. They don't. That tells us a different story. So it is a number of factors that fuel this perception change. I think part of that question was there's an allegation that our lawyers encourage accused persons to plead guilty. I have heard this comment. Even when I started, it was right when I started, because I say in 2001, people were saying, if I go for a legal aid board appointed lawyer, I know I'm going to be convicted, whether I plead guilty or not. That was the perception at the time, 2001. We want to believe, Chair, that if one looks at a guilty verdict coming from guilty pleas with the totality of the cases that the NPA brings, as well as the number of withdrawals of cases that we take on and the cases that are withdrawn in court, and then you factor in the fact that the prosecution doesn't prosecute a matter where they don't think they don't have prospects of getting a conviction. So if we factor all those things on, I do not rule out the fact that there may be one or two lawyers who may be inclined to say, if I have a conviction-minded magistrate and my client does not appear to have a good case here, they may encourage him to plead guilty to a lesser charge. Maybe he'll get a light sentence. I think the temptation is there. I mean, in practice, Chair, I know it happens. But in the legal aid board, what we do, we monitor the number of guilty pleas that a practitioner has to his name. Our technology is such that when a matter is received, we follow it through. So we're able to can monitor to see why does that particular practitioner have more guilty pleas as opposed to guilty verdict. And then we take corrective action. So that's why I speak with that confidence here, Chair, to say I know it's not happening, because our lawyers know. They complete what we call the meta-activity report that enables us to track the progress of each and every matter at any given point in time. So I guess my response is to say it is a perception. There may be one or two where it may be happening, but where it happens, we've got systems that give us the early warnings to can take the corrective action. So in general, I want to say we don't actively encourage it and our lawyers don't actively encourage it. I think that's what I want to say in general about it. It is true that part of the reason why this perception also persists is because our lawyers are viewed as inexperienced or young or inferior. Chair, it is a worldwide trend. Those of you who read novels, there's a guy called John Grisham who writes novels about the legal system in America. If you are a public defender, you are viewed as the lowest of the low. It is a phenomenon that we need to understand. And people generally don't like being viewed, say, I'm a public defender, particularly in those states. I'm not talking about third world countries. I'm talking about in the first world countries, where you can really make a lot of money as a corporate lawyer. But you go to practice your law as a public defender because you've got nothing else to do. That's why they view it like that. But in third world countries, particularly in South Africa, we are a leading light in the third world in terms of what a mature government can do if it properly funds the legal aid system. So what I want to say is, it is a worldwide trend, but in this country we've bucked the trend. We have more experienced judicial lawyers who come second best to our justice center lawyers, who are less experienced, simply because of what we expose them to. Magistrates vouch for this. Judges tell me this. I think I've addressed that part somewhat, but if I've left out something, my board members are here to deal with that perception. We are fighting it. We know it's there, but we think it's not as bad as it was 5 years ago. Let me deal with the effect of our independence. It is true we say we are independent because the Legal Aid Act says we have to be independent. Let me just explain that by also an example. When the Buremax case started, these are people who were plotting to overthrow the current government. There was a serious problem at cabinet, I think, because my minister phoned me to say, how can you fund these people? How can you defend these people? But that's where the independence comes in, because people who are assessed in terms of our means test, who qualify for legal aid, have to be assisted. So if we were not independent, the minister would have been able to instruct me and say, you don't represent those people. I think that example explains what we mean by independent. We're independent, but we get money from government. We must account to government for the money we get. So that's why we have to report. We can't just be given money and be left to our devices. So that's the reporting part to the minister, and to come and account to Parliament here, to our portfolio committee, and to the NPOP here. So I think I just thought that example explains what we mean when we say we have to be independent. In terms of budget, there was a question about the budget, whether it is adequate, why sometimes we don't do enough civil work. We have baseline funding in terms of the MTEP. Now, the way we do our budget is based on the work we currently have and the work we foresee we will have. But we always make additional requests outside of our MTEP allocation, because we set out facts to the minister and to Treasury to say, we receive so many requests that we can't deal with. Can you increase our baseline funding? Or not increase, but can you give us additional funds? Because once they give us additional funds, like I think the CEO mentioned, the past year we got 10 million. No, the past year we got 35 million, did it? Yeah. This year, 35 million additional funds. That's not part of our baseline funding. But the understanding we have is once we've received money like that, for the future MTEF allocation, that amount gets factored into our baseline funding. So in a way, we increase our capacity by doing that. But it's always very difficult to get money out of Treasury. Duty care lawyers, there was a question about them. Yes, they are a problem. But when the Justice Center model was decided to be adopted in 1998-1999, the thinking was that we can't just go on a one model system, because you'll find that with the Justice Center that we have now, in certain complex civil matters or certain complex criminal matters, we don't have experienced people who can deal with those cases. We have them sitting outside, so we bring them. So we have specially crafted areas where the need to brief judicare is there. But anyway, Chair, let me be, maybe I'll be incorrect to say it, but I'll say it. There will be an outcry in this country if we were to cut off judicare completely. There will be an outcry. Number one, we'll be judged to be politically incorrect, because we were told, even when we started the Justice Center model, that black people struggle to get through the profession. Once they're there, you take away their bread. It's a reality. That's a political, societal element we've had to deal with. So we use judicare for specialist complex cases, but we think even to bolster our capacity, we still use it. Unfortunately, as I say, it is an unwieldy horse to ride, judicare, because it is up to its own devices. But with our way and with the cooperation that we have now with the GCB and with the Law Society of South Africa, in terms of how much access we can have as a legal aid board to those judicare attorneys that we bring, we think we will get to the bottom of the problem of them containing the service of a less quality. It's true. After the judge, where the judicare practitioner will stand up and say, in an appeal, and say, "Judge, I concede there's no merit in this appeal. I just want to argue sentence." But those judges, we've read the record, and said, "No, you can't say that. What about that? What about that?" That's when he wakes up. See, we've read. But I think the point was made by Honorable Manuel that he knows his money is guaranteed. He is just to make an appearance. So what we've done with those lessons as a legal aid board is to try and make sure that we monitor. We ask for a report. When he finishes the case, we want a report. And we issued a directive that in all appeals, no advocate, judicare particularly, was going to concede the merit. And we demand to see the heads of argument to encourage us that their preparation was adequate. So those are some of the things we've done to make sure that they provide proper quality care. There was an issue about non-payment of judicare accounts. I think it came from Honorable Nyanda. I think we listed it as a risk, not that it's happening. It was a problem 2000-2001 where this parliament, I think, had to warn the legal aid board to say private practitioners always complain that their accounts take a long time to be paid. We have sorted out that problem. Our rate, the chief of finance, is here. She can tell you that we pay our accounts within 30 days. But we say we have to continue being vigilant, because once that part slides, then we're in trouble as an organization. So we've listed it as a risk that we need to be constantly being vigilant to, not that it's happening. The delay in the legal aid guide, I think it came from Honorable Leroux. We have had discussions, I've had meetings, I've had discussions with the minister. All I hear, Chair, is that the matter is receiving attention. I can't take it further than that. They know in the ministry, and the portfolio committee knows, our justice portfolio committee knows, that we've always complained it's not of our own doing. We do what the legislators say we must do every year. We prepare the guide, we submit it to the minister. It's up to the minister to take it through the process. So probably when the Department of Justice comes here, they may give a further light, another indication as to why the guide is being delayed from their end. Okay. I think I just need to check what other... Yes, there was a question about the rural areas and about the number of offices we may have in the northwest. I think there was an issue about Fort Beaufort West, yeah, that we may not be covered. Our outreach is never there. I think this is a very valuable comment, particularly about Beaufort West, because we constantly challenge our justice centers that are not very far from these areas to tell us how we can do it. Sometimes we have an agreement, a contract with a judicare-based firm of attorneys in that area to say, look, you attend to all our work, and this is how we're going to pay you. Sometimes it doesn't work. I think we had an arrangement like that in Port Alfred, but in Beaufort West, I think the NOE will respond to that as to what we can do or what is happening in that region. In the northwest, I know we have 5 offices, Honorable Mutegi. I know one of them is in Freiburg, is northwest. Yeah, one of them is in Freiburg. Yeah, one of them is in Mafeking, Rustenburg, Potchefstroom, Klerksdorp. And then we do have satellite offices too. But we are constantly looking at what other areas, because we say need should determine whether we have a presence. Because the capital expenditure of establishing a justice center is about 10 million, 20 million, 5 million, yeah. But anyway, I think Honorable Mseki raised this question last year, I remember. Yeah. Same question. Chair, I think let me just stop there and then maybe allow my 2 board members, if they have any other of the broader issues to deal with, before we go into the operational work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I wonder if you'll permit me to make a small commercial of my own before I make my point. Before the break, Chair, I was listening very carefully to your commercial, and I couldn't figure out really what it is you were trying to sell. So perhaps you can tell us what the product thanks. Chair, just 2 brief responses in addition to what that number has already covered. The first deals with the perception issues and the question of quality, and I think as I want to reinstate as Judge said, that this is a major concern for the board and an area that the board is sort of attending to in a very sort of progressive and thoughtful way. Just to say that we are one firm which employs about 1,500 lawyers, I think that's the single biggest legal practice in the country. And in the nature of things, they're bound to be slip-ups. I'm not saying that our lawyers are routinely slipping up, but when this sort of thing happens, it is bound to have an impact which can be out of proportion sometimes. To, one or two, we've had tests by candidates attorneys in a particular justice center, which got a lot of media coverage and so on. Maybe the board, and I think the executives will tell us how they, move to deal with that matter. But, one incident like that can be taken quite out of proportion, and I think the sort of impact that it has can be really bigger than the reality really is. So I think that point needs to be made. But I also want to say is that, as Gus said, we're monitoring the situation and aggressively dealing with the need to maintain and improve quality of service. And I'm sure that our executives will deal with this in a little more detail, but I just want to say that there are now systems which are in place, as Judge already alluded to. There's substantial and intensive training which we put our candidates and attorneys through. There are a number of different types of training programs that are there. The first one of which, for example, is the what they call court readiness program, which requires that before a candidate attorney even steps into court and picks up a file and says, your worship or whatever, that candidate attorney is exposed to the kind of experiences that will properly prepare them, both theoretically and in terms of observation and practice, and that no candidate attorney is really required to appear in court for the first 6 months. So that's, one of the reasons which we're making sure that we're not throwing people into the deep end with lack of experience and so on, and that they have an opportunity to observe their more experienced peers before they make any sort of foray into the court, for example. There are others as well, just also to say that there's an admission readiness program as well in place, in terms of which candidate attorneys are taken through their papers, almost like an in-house education and schooling, which will help them to be prepared for those examinations and to be equipped could themselves adequately. So that's all I have to say on that first point, Jay, in terms of the quality, I mean the efforts which are in place, and of course these are being reviewed on a regular basis. The second point I want to make, I think, was in relation to Honorable Mack's comment about the cooperation partners. And I think your concern was how is the quality and performance of cooperation partners monitored. Now, I think it's true that as independent service providers, you know, the cooperation partners, we don't have direct oversight over what they do. And I'm sure executives will talk to this in a lot more detail. But all of them, all the NGOs, the university law clinics, the specialist organizations that deal with, you know, legal cases and so on, have their own systems of monitoring. And I can say, for example, in the university law clinic context, the university themselves, the faculty monitor on the law clinic, so that's one form of control. The second is that all law clinics are, in terms of the Attorney's Admission Attorneys Act, required to be accredited by the Law Society in that particular province. So they will only be accredited provided that they are qualified attorneys, they have a requisite number of years of experience and so on, which enables them to supervise and do the work that the clinics do. And the third thing is that in the law clinic context, students don't appear in court, right? Because in this country, students don't have right of appearance, even final students. So all the appearances are actually done by the qualified staff, the professional staff, and that's the attorneys who are employed there. So that's those are the 2 points I wanted to raise. And then perhaps just to lay to rest Honorable Manyosi's concern about staff safety. I can assure you, Honorable Manyosi, that our staff are not threatened because they're losing cases. They're not threatened with violence by their clients. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think I just want to add my comment to maybe deal with the passion that was raised by Honorable Leroux for the Free State. I think he noted that in one of the slides, the University of the Free State was indicated as not having given us any new matter for the year 2007-2008. I think that is really basically because as a legal aid board, we look for cooperation partners who are really going to help us extend our reach in areas that we do not deal with. And I think most recently we have just started having dedicated children's rights units, and the University of the Free State was handling or running what they called was a family law project. Now that's an area that now our lawyers are trained to deal with within the legal aid board. So there was no reason for us to enter into a cooperation agreement with the University of Free State for the year 2007-2008. But I think like any other cooperation partner, the University of the Free State is able to again approach the legal aid board to come and help us with any other area that we are not dealing with, specifically to help us extend our reach into the law areas. Thank you.
Yes, I think so. So the Mr. West.
Oh.
Mr. West, I thought you said, yeah. I can continue. Captain and members. Just to respond to very quickly in short, some would be much more additional. On the issue that the chairperson, the legal report, the number is called on. In relation to the budget, preparation and motivation. One just reiterate two issues that yes, we have a plan, and the fact that we reiterate the point that there is a national footprint. It is a targeted program that responds to how we want to grow the business over time. And that is tied up to our MCF cycle. Just to reconfirm that our one justice center opened in this past period, it was in Tembisa. And just to reiterate our growth in terms of targeting. The second issue on the budget side, one needs to say that slide 17 and slide 42 in particular relate to case backlog. And maybe to say, especially on slide 17, that the issue of the budget
as it relates to sustainability is a critical element for us. Although we have budget allocation through the MTEP cycle by the National Treasury through the DOJ, case backlog funding is only paid over for us during the course of the financial year. For instance, in this financial year, we haven't yet received case backlog funds for this period. So sustainability is an issue of essence to us, and we have already raised with the National Treasury and the DOJ that to make our planning quite sustainable, we need an upfront allocation as much as it relates to DOJ and MTA. The second issue, staff safety, just in short, to add up on what Professor was saying earlier, slide 50. If we take the package of what we report on there, in health and safety related matters, wellness programs, HIV AIDS programs, and much more in particular also, occupational health and safety related aspects that are a requirement for the environment of operation for all officials of the legal board need to be met. It could be responding to office things, for instance, as a matter of reference. It may be referring to the tools that we use, like, for instance, the IT intensive, for instance. What are the measures that we have put to make sure that the staff is safe? And the last issue that I need to raise is about what Honorable Nyana has raised on the disability side. Let me acknowledge up front that the targeted percentage given to organizations in government is about 2%. We haven't arrived at that. We are still at 25%. Our attempt in responding to that in our recruitment drive and in our recruitment process on our advert, we place in terms of our biasness towards targeting people with disabilities. And in instances where we have already those individuals in our organization, we go an extra mile to see to it to say that they are capacitated, so that when a position of permanence, for instance, arises, they are being prioritized. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'll deal with the questions that have not been raised, or maybe elaborate on some of the higher level input given by Judge and other speakers. First, just to dispense with, and I'll group it into categories, because some of the questions from the honorable speakers were actually dealing with the same subject, so I'll clump them together. First, dealing with the national footprint, and just to clear some slides. In slide 10, I think it was, the one dealing with the Northwest, just to give clarity on it. The presentation that is provided in the slide is actually a presentation dealing with how we deliver legal aid in terms of the legal aid board, and it's done through four regional offices. And if you notice, the Northwest was the only province that was shared between two regions. And NT was under Western Cape, Northern Cape. And we have Northwest with five justices and two satellite offices. And Kopanong, which is your Kauteng, Limpopo, Northwest, they have two. So altogether, there are seven justice centers in the Northwest. I'm pleased to say in the new financial year, we have increased our regional capacity to five regional offices. And now Northwest and Free State have combined to actually provide service. So that deals with Northwest. In terms of Fort Beaufort, I'm also pleased to say that there is a satellite office at Fort Beaufort. It's currently operational, and it's running through, it's being administered through George Justice Center. So that's how we're actually providing services at that point. So dealing with access, let's talk about the rural access. I think much of the rural access links to our civil provision of civil legal aid, because by and large we cover all courts. Criminal courts, there's a presence, or we provide capacity at every court that deals with criminal matters. And during the presentation, both Judge and our CEO, we did talk about the gap in terms of civil legal aid, especially as it deals with capacity to actually provide it. But notwithstanding that, we have got a program in place to identify gaps in terms of where our coverage is not adequate. And hence we have the National Footprint Expansion Program that primarily links it, how do we actually provide better coverage in more rural areas? And then you'll notice in the financial year that passed, 8 new satellite offices were created, and all of them were at rural areas. Going forward over the next 2 years, this year and next year, this year we've got another 6 satellite offices proposed, and so for the following year there's more satellite offices. But in addition to that, just to ensure that we don't lose clients that could be clients of the Legal Aid Board, we have a strategy in place to link with advice offices. There's many advice offices that provide wonderful work in the community. And what we do is we have got a linkage program whereby we try to provide backup legal services to advice offices. So on a regular basis, every one of our justice centers have to link with advice offices. So they either refer clients to us, or we actually sometimes go visit them on a scheduled basis, every fortnight, for instance, where we deal with those clients that have matters where client files can be opened that would fall within our team. With regard to slides 21 and 25, just in terms of the fact of the discrepancy in stats, it's actually not a discrepancy. It deals with the level of accuracy one wants, whether it's to a decimal point or you want an integer. And therefore, you find that in the presentation that they add up to 90, the 2.5s were actually left off. It was giving full integers. If you moved it to one decimal point, it would be 0.5, and then it would add up. If you want to give it to, if we actually did use simple rounding, it would have rounded off to 1 and 1 and 1 and 1. In hindsight, maybe we should have just left it to point to a one decimal, and then it would have reconciled exactly. But there's no actual standard the figures are still, the integrity of the data is still working. If I can deal with LAB capacity chairperson, just to indicate that one of the members spoke about the disparity between the capacity of the NPA and the Legal Aid Board. And the NPA as a ratio moving towards 2 practitioners per court, whilst we're struggling at about 1 in regional courts and under 1 in district courts. And I think that's the concern, and we believe it does impact in terms of our ability to actually deal with the volumes that are coming with us. We don't say that we necessarily need 2 practitioners per court in every, because we don't actually do all the matters on the whole. There's a certain percentage of matters that are run by private practitioners. There's a certain percentage of matters that we will not give legal aid for. But certainly a ratio at about 1.5 to 1 would be more appropriate in some courts. A member spoke about the, in slide 10, where we talk about the risk, the sophistication of the SAP and NPA in terms of prosecuting cases. The reason why it's a risk is that as the prosecution enhances their skills in terms of various using expert forensics, for instance, and they're able to prosecute more effectively. Our defense lawyers also need to be skilled in terms of how to actually handle that type of evidence that is being put forward. So we identify the risk so that we then take mitigation measures to actually train our persons to provide effective representation to our clients when such type of expert witnesses are provided. I'll talk a little bit about backlog costs, just to inform members that the backlog cost is a special project, and it's run and it's being coordinated by the Department of Justice under the leadership of the Deputy Minister. And it's primarily creating extra capacity. So the 27 costs we talk about is extra capacity to actually deal with the backlog matters at identified sites where backlog is the problem. So a survey was done of all backlog matters for all regional courts, and those that had the highest, they were given additional capacity in the form of courtrooms with the personnel, magistrates, prosecutors. And in our case, they gave us funds for the Legal Aid Board to hire practitioners. And what was actually happening is that trial-ready cases that were already backlogged and long overdue were moved to this court so that they could be disposed of on a continuous sole basis. And the project has been successful in ensuring that quite a lot of cases were cleared. In terms of monitoring it, the baseline figures were used at the beginning of the project, and then at the end of the period, which is now 15 months later, and that is at the end of the financial year, the outstanding matters in the virtual were then considered again. And compared to the baseline, the reduction was 6.9%, and that's what that links with. But in those particular courts where there were backlogs, the reduction was obviously a lot greater because of the greater effort put in to actually reduce it. What is the cause of backlogs? I think there's any number of causes that results in cases being delayed. Our experiences would show that some of the things that cause a lot of problems in court in matters not proceeding would be delayed investigations continuing, which results in the time period being long, as well as the witnesses not coming on time or not coming at all, which results in the matter being postponed. Obviously, we, as indicated, I think, by the CEO, we monitor every case that's on the backlog matter. Our managers at every office do actually take stock of turnaround time. And where the matters exceed a certain turnaround time, in this case, we track matters on an individual basis once they're over 12 months, so that we know exactly what causes the delay and what can be implemented to actually speed up those processes. With regard to withdrawal rates, one of the members did mention that is it 130 looks a bit high. I think it was acknowledged 130 is a bit high. But I think it also links to the fact that we find that the withdrawal rate actually higher when a lawyer is present, because when the prosecution has a case that is not winnable, then they actually after a while they actually withdraw the case. They don't actually take it. So we it does not mean that if there's 100,000 or 130,000 withdrawal cases, that means our lawyers did nothing in those cases. We monitor at what stage in the matter cases are withdrawn. We find that many cases are withdrawn just before the trial date. So effectively, we would have done a lot of work in those matters and prepared for them, and then it's withdrawn. So in that case, it becomes a waste of resource. With regard to how many cases are withdrawn domestic violence, you've noticed in slide 35, we reported the number of domestic violence cases. There's actually just over 4,000 of them, so the number can't be more than that, because that's the only amount of them. So the bulk of the cases would be at the higher end of the differentiation in terms of cases. If we look at the staff budget, and there was a particular question in terms of our recruitment and retention, I think we have some problems, and many of our previous submissions to various stakeholders dealt with the disparity in terms of salary. The salary discrepancy resulted in people jumping from the legal aid board to the NPA otherwise. We think the problem will be solved once OSD is implemented, because there will be no incentive for anyone to want to actually move over for any other reason but salary. The salary will be equal whether you work for the NPA or for the legal aid board, based on the type of position you hold. So if you work for the legal aid board in the regional court and you work for the NPA in the regional court, the salary should be the same in terms of scale. So then the only factor that will lead people jumping ship is what interests them more, their career option. And we'd like to believe that people will thereafter stay. The movement of people, staff, particularly has been affected at our candidate tally level, because our candidate tenants are employed on a contract, short-term contract for 1 or 2 years, and once they're offered permanent positions in, for instance, the NPA, which pays a lot more, then we find that people give us very short notices and they leave. Again, OSD will actually address that, because candidate tenants are envisaged to be paid a very good competitive salary, and that will provide the incentive for people to want to stay and become admitted in the profession. With regard to community outreach programs, there was a few questions on that. We have got various methods or interventions in place to ensure that we link with constituency officers, with ward committees, with the councillors. But I think the reality is it's a process, because all our offices cover huge coverage areas. And every year they have got a particular target to meet as to how many constituency offices, how many ward committees they need to meet. But it's never enough to cover it in 1 year. It may take a period of 3 to 5 years to cover it. So if they have not covered a particular constituency office now, it will be covered over time. And we do monitor those types of statistics. With regard to duty care, may I just add to what others have already been said, to say that it is an important vehicle of delivery of legal services. In addition to skills that Jack spoke about, the second matter is the conflict of interest, and we would need to get someone outside the justice center to assist clients where there's conflict. We do not allow for a practitioner of choice. So a client can't ask for a particular attorney or advocate to represent them. We have got what is called the accreditation system. So all our judiciary practitioners are accredited through that, and they get accredited by virtue of them applying to be part of our process of providing services, as well as they must prove to us that they are in good standing with the law society, that their books are and all the exceptions. And once they are accredited, the system thereafter, when we decide a matter must go on judicare, or in some cases we say every 10th matter must go on judicare, the system then selects practitioners based on formulas that are more BEE friendly, etc. So we ensure that it's fair, it's transparent, no one gets preference over the other, and the system actually works fairly well. We have got systems in place to ensure that we do receive progress reports so that we can actually see the quality of work we do. Chairperson, cooperation partners, I think that was covered adequately in terms of the Free State. Just to assure committee members that we do share our instruments with the core partners in terms of monitoring quality, and on an annual basis we do audit the statistics that they provide with us, as well as to ensure that they do have quality instruments in place. The guilty and P-bugs, I think judges covered that adequately. Last one, dealing with fuel costs, just to say that yes, the budget when we first did it for this financial year would have been factored at a lower per litre cost. During the course of the year, we'd look at how that impacts on us, and we may have to reassign funds for that. I think that's it from my side.
In terms of the issue of the number of prosecutors for court in the number of legal aid board lawyers and how this can be addressed, the only way it can be addressed is with additional funds. And as we said, as we explained, that in terms of the funding applications we make to the department and to the National Treasury, that is covered, but there isn't ever enough money to cover that. And linked to that is the question on the sophistication of the NPA and the SAP is, again, linked resources and their use of experts as well as senior counsel, etc., whereas our budgets don't allow us to do that. So once, as they use greater sophistication, what we're saying is that we have to match it to responses, and that's going to require greater resources. That's not to say they will outdo us. That challenge we take on inside. And then the issue of just going through it to just make sure which ones we haven't addressed. Our dependence on technology and then therefore our dependence on power and the impact of power outages. I think generally, with or without technology, the level of technology we use, power outages is impacting on us. It has disrupted our business. Importantly, it's disrupted courts, because I think that if courts can't function, we can't work. And that means that it will impact on the case backlogs. So we are in discussions with the department, and we are looking at alternate power supply. But it is expensive. So I think that linking to the reality that if we are faced with this challenge over the next 7 to 8 years, then we're going to have to address it. We are going to have to address the issue of alternate power supply. And it's, again, with the department we are looking at that, because this is not a budgeted for item, as you know, none of us expected this. So we haven't budgeted for it. And, I mean, we're looking across at every office if we had to have alternate power supply. We're looking at 30-plus million rand that we need on our own, leave alone the courts or anyone else. So that is a challenge. But what we are doing is looking at how we can structure our work so that people can keep busy even when there is a power outage, and that they can ensure that they set up their work in that way. If the schedules are provided and structured in terms of when the outage would happen, that will allow that to happen. So I think that's where the cooperation and the management from Eskom side is going to become critical. But yes, it is impacting us. In terms of technology, it will affect us, but because it's not at a stage where we are out for days at a time, I don't think that it's something that we can't recover from. And then there's the issue of litigation against the legal aid board, and how does it affect our budget? This is not serious litigation at this stage. It's more listening to the risk in terms of in the normal course of events, all organizations have litigation against them. In the past, we had a great amount of litigation, especially around disputes over fees by judicial lawyers, etc. And there, what we do is we go through a process, and part of the agreement we have with lawyers, judicial lawyers, is that they have to go through that process to first try and settle the matter before we get to it. So there would be disputes about what they think they should be paid in terms of the work they've done and what we think, on the one hand. On the other hand, the general corporate type of litigation which any organization faces in the running of an organization. So that's not a very high cost. It doesn't impact on us in a big way. But the point is we have to manage our business in a way to ensure that it doesn't. So again, it links to the issue of risk. And then the question of, I think public education and our ability to reach 46 million South Africans is always going to be difficult because of the fact of the reality of the vast country that we have and the limited resources that we have. We don't have a big part of our budget devoted to that because we actually don't. That's not our primary mandate. But in the course of things, as we reach out to communities, we ensure that even when we have our annual report, we ensure that we get a special focus newsletter done just in terms of what has been achieved as a report to the community at large, but also then on what services we offer as a reminder to communities as to where they can reach us and what kind of services we offer. And we put that out with newspaper supplements, etc. But we will continue to build on that, and we will continue to link to community-based organizations as the NOE, our National Operations Executive, I said, including ward committees, constituency offices, and the community-based forums, etc. So that is something that's an ongoing work. And as we have funds, we will address that. Linking to that, we also work with communities to respond to issues that are prevalent in particular communities that are, for example, more civil in nature. So if they in a particular community there's an issue around pensions, then we will do a special focus on pensions, etc. And then there's the issue of value for money and for the work done, and in terms of the legal aid board, how do we assess this and what do we think? As our chairperson has said, I think that as the legal aid board goes, we really turn the organization around. We are high on performance, and we keep a target which is a high target, and we are confident that we will continue to perform at that level, and that in terms of that, we are very serious about our accountability to the government and to the parliament and to the public at large, because it's taxpayers' money to say that money is well spent. And I think we can see that in our reach, the number of people we reach, the access that we've improved to justice for those hundreds of thousands of people, and our increasing involvement in civil legal aid in terms of the non-criminal net is also that we have there. So I think the more we can ensure that we increase our access and we increase our quality, we think we're improving on our value. We also, in terms of our strong governance and finance platforms, the more we ensure that we spend our budgets and we don't have qualified audits, etc., it links to the issue of ensuring value for money. But more importantly, that at any point, the number of matters that we are able to do with the same amount of funds through our justice centers is always higher than what we can do if we had to give it all up to judicate. So in that sense, it's a more cost-effective model, and that ensures the value for money. So I think those are all the issues, and I'm sure we've covered now all of them, but if there are any, we're happy to respond to them at each other.
Thanks for the responses to a number of questions. I'm looking at our time now. Maybe I should have done this when we started, but if you come to appear before the committee, don't book a flight for the same day because you might be disappointed. So you must just be flexible to know that you might stay until later. So that's a serious note there. So that they can just make some changes in time. Colleagues, if there will be some follow-up questions, I will allow that, but not now, because our time now is 13:15. So,
I've got a few questions from this side. But let us agree on our dividend. We are there now for rent and set again for rent and cooperation now. Can I be guided, colleagues, before we proceed? Okay, then you have my judgment. I think what I'm wrong. Let me check. I just have a follow-up question. Because we might delay them necessary. Why they've done that task. Because these are no questions, America can give them only passport questions that they can take with them to their offices. I know, always they'll send them in writing. Because we'll be debating this class, justice and all the entities on the 4th of June. That's where each member will dedicate his or her speech to a particular entity. So there are three members who indicated they want to debate the legal aid, but I don't know if I'll allow that. There's only one hand over my nose. See, your questions, depending what kind of question I do, but if you need to come on this side, I will say to the passport, they'll send them. Danikas.
Chairperson, there are no questions. It's only to suggest that your question must be dealt with in the manner that you deem fit right now, so that when we come back from lunch, we don't deal with this entity, we deal with the next entity.
Yeah, great minds there. They think alike. No. I think the legal aid board, they've done well, compared to when we first had these many concerns. Really, it would be unfair to just criticize for the sake of it. And even to appreciate your team, Judge Nambo, because whenever we go for this oversight visit, in my visit, I make sure that there's a rep from the airport, and they're always there. And thank you very much for that. They're always there, and for the whole week, because usually we're taking the whole week right now. Even the current one, when we're in Mpumalanga, when was it, Mamflo? Not so long ago.
A month ago.
Yeah. In March, yes. They were there the whole week. In the financial part, maybe what is missing here is your spending trend. If I can have them, your spending trend a month. The spending trend a month. How are you doing as far as that is concerned? This question will go to when we go for the next session this afternoon. I know you're not listening, and you would not steal this question. I mean, the public protector, when he had it. Now, in terms of what's happening in the country now, this satanic behavior by some of the people who are really maiming this foreigners who are in our country. This barbaric action. We will ask the office of the public protector if they'll be doing something about it, but we'll ask that when you see them the next time. No, they don't need it. But let's say one of these people who feel aggrieved, maybe they took his property and stuff. These very same legal immigrants or foreigners, whatever you call them, if they decide to come and ask for the service, can you render the services? No, we have this person there. Is a foreigner. It's possible to run services to them.
So the question that maybe you don't qualify because I'm not saying, but I know you gave me an excellent one. Only one I think it was polygamy before you leave now. The one that will take taking with the your spending trend. Maybe before you respond, let me clear this one first. The question of I'm blessed you are trying to address the question of the one practitioner, the court, which really is a serious challenge. I think as members, I went to raise into the department. I mean, the situation really is unbearable. There's no way that one person can handle all the issues in a particular court. Let's deal with it. But in the meantime, what can we expect in the meantime? Based on this challenge, why don't we just do our best as a committee to talk to the minister and the department? In the meantime, what can we expect from this? I think people are complaining because of that. You know, you can't expect someone to work like a machine, non-stop. Machines sometimes tend to be serviced as well, for each item. I don't know. As I'm saying, in the meantime, what can you expect from me? If I was asked to advise other entities as to what are you doing, what method are you using to make sure we get this qualified report, what would be your response? Because they got audit committees, they were doing it as well. If others will say, no, we're having our CFOs, we're having you look at their finance and health, it's just that. I don't know how are you getting tried. I wonder, Judge, how are you getting tried? It baffles me. But I'm going to listen to many departments and many entities. I can tell you now, I've got the AGIS reports here indicating that many of these people are still struggling. Can you believe that in some entities they are paying medical aid to people who are no more? They're busy paying for those medical aid. Let me leave. No, colleagues, I think let me leave. I don't want to ask them any more questions. I think it's enough for the day. I mean, people who are prepared to work and should have that are prepared to improve. And they were honest today to even tell us of some of their challenges or some of the shortcomings. I mean, where can you get people like that? I think what I can say is that maybe let's allow the judge to have his parting shot before thank them on our behalf. So, can I allow you, this will be a parting shot before we adjourn for lunch, judge and the team. Can you see members are satisfied? I said them ask questions. I said, no, we can't ask any more questions. I'm surprised. Since on the 6th of May, they never happened. For the first time, we members don't have follow-up questions. I'm surprised. You must be here. Unless, because I came a bit late this morning, and you are here already with these members, I don't know what happened. In my absence. But Judge, any parting shots for me?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for those encouraging comments. On the refugees question, we do cover them, teacher. We do cover them. For criminal work, there's actually a judgment of a full bench of the WLD, which did confirm that they are entitled to legal aid if they have criminal cases, even for civil. So those civil cases that are covered in the legal aid guide, we do cover them. In terms of how we do it, I suppose it's a question. question of the time, a point in time. When I took over, I found a board that was started serious tension with integrated management. But that's tension that works sometimes. But in terms of what they can do, maybe our advantage is that we have a board that is very interrogative of issues. We don't just accept things at face value. We ask for things and we go in, even with these offices. Maybe that's an advantage. Allied may not have boards, I don't know. But perhaps the biggest credit should go to the CEO and his team. I say that with all honesty. She came in, we had a chat just after she was appointed, and I said, these are the problems, these are the challenges. This is what we need to resolve. And she committed herself, and she has not disappointed. So credit in terms of why we've continued to achieve unqualified audit reports should go in large measure to the CEO and her team. That's my parting shot. Thank you very much for having listened to us.
Thank you, Jonathan. I don't know, because the judge has spoken, whether we should want to talk.
Yeah.
Let's try, Jonathan. Sure, I think we have already appreciated the work done by the legal board as we were raising questions. And let's just repeat that to say that compared to the past, it looks like a huge crop effort has been made. And that is very encouraging, because as we indicated, it's our view that this entity is there to assist those who cannot afford the underdogs. I can only say that keep on doing the good job until all of us are satisfied. We know it's difficult to satisfy everybody, but let's do that. It is important to do that despite all the challenges that are there, because the public out there expect us to deliver satisfactory service delivery to them. And I don't believe that any one of us here would expect us to do less than that. So we want to say to you, as you strive to achieve the maximum objective work that you do, you can count on our support. I think Jefferson, that's what you actually whispered to me to say. And I said to you, go back there and double the effort. Thank you very much.
On that dynamic and encouraging note, I want to assure the judge and the team that they were going to take up the matter of the legal aid guide. And probably that they were going to take the matter up as a serious and I was not aware that these things were hanging up until now, but we're going to take the matter up. Not next week or never, but this week.
Yeah.
On that note, can I think the right board invite all of us to enjoy our nice lunch down there, because all the inner circle of life is still intact. Some of the up and down that we experienced this morning is not part of the legacy, you know. Yeah, no, there were those minor changes, man. Yeah, and the raffles are better, but they were able to get it right. I'm not going to waste time by introducing the members again. I think, and that is what I was here. Who are not here this morning? Because I know the panelists, I know all of them. Yeah. Okay, I'm questioning when I'm
employed to chair this credit committee. We are having Umaminyanda over there. Next to her is the Honorable Leru, followed by Honorable West, and then followed by Honorable Mac. Mac, can you see? The another thing there is Re. Then the member coming in now is Honorable Manuel. Without any waste of time, let me hand over to the public protector to introduce the team, and from there I'll outline how I'm going to handle this, this hearing. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. You know I'm Abedle Lawrence Mushon. I'll start by introducing myself. On my left is Halalelo Masidi. She's our communications officer. On my right is the Deputy Public Protector, Mamiki Shai, advocate. Next to her is Zain Dogbert, our Chief Financial Officer, CFO. And next to him is Shelly Toke. She's the acting CEO. Maybe as I start, I'll tell you why she's acting. And finally, we have our IT man, Charles Mutau. There are reasons why the IT man should also be with us in this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mushwan. Let me thank the office, Chief, because last year, during the public hearing, the budget hearing, members asked you a catalogue of questions that you were expected to respond in writing. I'm happy to say we received those responses. That's why you didn't get any follow-up questions in writing. You feel that those responses were accurate, were satisfied with it. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm going to open the... I'm going to give you the floor now to address the committee. But I want to check something with you, and maybe you can... advice some of us colleagues. I was phoned by one official in my province, in Polokwane. As I'm speaking, she is suspended. She made a little submission to me that she was suspended because she refused to authorize wrong payment. Now she is charged for insubordination. Told that she was supposed to appear before makeshift DC yesterday. And I said, I mean, this is a very interesting case. I didn't say the blessing is bad because I'll be meeting the public protector, and then I'll see if his office can play some role in intervening in those kind of circumstances. While your office and other offices are working very hard to try and uproot corruption in many government offices and in municipalities and everywhere, there are people who are victimized simply because they can't except to carry wrong instructions. Now, in your briefing, I would be glad to hear if your office can play some role into this kind of cases. This was a commercial break before I hand over to the family protector to address us. Over to you, Advocate Mushwan.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I wish to thank you in particular, Chair, and your committee for affording us this auspicious opportunity to make a presentation of the activities of our office. It has always been a pleasure for us to appear before this committee. It's always good that you have some other people overlooking you, overseeing what you are doing, and to hear from them how you are performing. And we always appreciate all forms of criticism, and we always improve after appearing before this committee. Maybe I need to start with the third one. We finally managed to appoint a CEO who started working with us from the 1st of April, I think, last year. And I think so. And somehow things did not go well between our office and him, and he was suspended last year. And there was a disciplinary hearing, and he was found guilty. However, there is an appeal pending, but that's why I said let me start with the third one. So we are at that stage of the proceedings, but we can rightly say that despite all of those difficulties, that was one of the challenges that we faced, but the office is still running as smoothly as possible. I thought I needed to start with that one. And the second one, actually, our presentation will be mainly be made by the acting CEO, who is Shirley Tucker. She has been appointed to be the acting CEO, so she will be presenting on the strategic plan, the successes, and the challenges that our offices have encountered. And then as far as the finances are concerned, our Chief Financial Officer, Zane Dockert, will be presenting on our finances. There are some few IT matters which I think our IT manager will deal with at once. That's how our presentation will go. But when it comes to questions, I and the Deputy Public Protector will be there to respond to the questions and, of course, operational questions will ideally be responded by the people who are involved in operational matters, but we may add to that. And before I come to the question that you posed to me, Chair, I think it is important to also voice our dissatisfaction over the what we see happen in our country. You will see that I did not copy from what I did not hear during the last meeting, Chair. And you'll understand why I'm saying this. We are equally concerned as the Office of the Public Protector to see these activities happening. And I was worried initially, you know, just like you were. I was saying, but where are our parliamentarians? What are they doing when these things are happening out there? Because one would think that this matter is affecting all of us, and we needed to be all out there, join hands, and try and see whether we cannot find workable solutions. But I was impressed this morning when I discovered that there is the WIPS task team that has already started functioning, has already visited some areas. But I can also proudly say that as Chapter 9 institutions, that is the Office of the Public Protector, the Unified Commission, the Independent Electoral Commission, and the CGE, the Commission on Gender Equality, we also called an urgent meeting where we're joined by members from the civil society, the churches, Voice for Human Rights, and other individuals, where we also formed a task team, which again on Thursday to concretize our terms of reference. But immediately we have actually declared that that situation cannot be defined in any way. That is a crisis that is facing this country, which calls for intervention by all of us. And by saying that also is to show that during the review of Chapter 9 institutions, there was emphasis that Chapter 9 institutions must operate in collaboration. This is one area where we have started to work in collaboration with Chapter 9 institutions. And I may also mention that in the investigation of the ESCOM, the electricity problem, it's not only the Office of the Public Protector alone, but we are collaborating with the Human Rights Commission. In that investigation, we will be reporting once again on this issue tomorrow during our media briefing here in Cape Town. So I thought I needed to allude to that one. So you'll see that I was ready to report on that one. Now, on the question of anybody being forced to do the wrong thing, I mean, it can't be defined in any other term than an abuse of office power. I think part of our mandate is to deal with the abuse of office power. So if that matter can be referred to us, we can look at it. It's obvious, it falls squarely within our mandate, and it reminds me of a whistleblower in the Free State who alerted, who reported something to our office against the municipal manager. That person was summarily suspended. When he reported the suspension to us, we were able to intervene. And I know that person was immediately reinstated because we can't allow such things to go on. So I wish that individual had also alerted us before he or she was suspended. But maybe I will ask the CEO to take full notes from you so that we can follow up that matter and check with our office. Without any waste of time, I will ask the CEO to kick off with the presentation. Thank you.
The content of the presentation consists of the objectives of this presentation, legal framework, the mandate, performance on the strategic plan 2007-2008 financial year, conclusion and discussion. And then the objective of this presentation is to brief members of the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Affairs on the following: the strategic plan for the 2007-2008 financial year, our successes, challenges, and the budget. Our legal framework is derived from the Constitution, the Public Protector Act, and the Executive Members Ethics Act. Then our mandate is to strengthen constitutional democracy by conducting investigations into alleged improper conduct by organs of state and report and recommend corrective remedial action. And then for the 2007-08 financial year, we define three strategic objectives. The first one is to conducting investigations and reporting, which is our core function. The second one is executive management. The third one is outreach program. The fourth one is corporate support services. The objective of program one is to conduct effective, efficient, informed, timely, and high quality investigations. And then the outcome is to improve service delivery to all stakeholders. And then for this program, I'm only going to highlight our achievements. For the past financial year, we managed to conduct 34 systemic and own initiative investigations and finalize 11 and in terms of our act, we're supposed to investigate on receipt or on own initiative. So this includes cases that we investigated on our own accord without waiting for people to lodge a complaint to our officers. And then on our investigation, we have several investigations. In other investigations, we only finalize them by closing reports. But in other investigations, we issue corrective remedial action through reports. And then for us, for the past financial year, we finalized 40 reports, which were issued to different organs of service. And then all those recommendations that we made were accepted and are in the process of being implemented. Now I'm going to also deal with the statistical overview. This slide does not consist of cases that were brought forward to the 2007-2008 financial year. Because as an office, we realized that our statistics were not accurate. As a result, we commissioned a file audit during the past financial year, and we are still awaiting the final report by the auditor. That final report will be recorded in the annual report at the end of this year. So that slide indicates the number of cases that we receive per the provincial office and national office. For the past financial year, we received 13,106 cases, and we finalized 11,280 cases. And then at the end of the financial year, as at 31st March 2008, we are going to carry over 6,446,000 cases. And then that's the second chart relates to the non-jurisdictional cases that we receive as an office. We have realized that people, because of the West Public Protect, people report all the cases to our office. As a result, we do receive cases that are not relevant to our mandate, but we still assist those people. So for the past financial year, we received 2,887 non-jurisdictional cases, and then we referred 7,744 cases to other institutions. And then this chart indicates the cases that we received since 2005-06 financial year, 2006-07, and then 2007-08. For the 2005-06 financial year, we received a lot of cases. We received 70,000 cases. And then this was as a result of the impact of our outreach program. And then in the 2006-07 financial year, we see there was a decline. There are various reasons for the decline of statistics. One can be that people are aware and know about the role and function of the OPP. As a result, they only report relevant cases. The other reason might be that we still have to reach out more to the community. And then in 2007-08, we received 13,000 cases. And then this shows that we are also, last year we increased the number of cases that we received. And then for the 2005-06 financial year, there was a high number of cases that we finalized. There was a decline in 2006-07, and then in 2007-08, there was also a decline. And then this chart represents the number of cases that are older than a year. Last year, one of our strategic objectives was to reduce the number of cases, to finalize all cases within a year. And then for our achievement today is that we managed to, at the end, only have 432 cases that were carried over to the 2008 financial year. And then this chart represents the time we take in finalizing our cases. When you look at the chart, you can see that we managed to finalize not 3 months, and 62% of cases we received were finalized between not 3 months. That's a great achievement. And then only 15% of cases were finalized between 4 to 6 months, and then only 12% of cases were finalized 7 to 12 months, and only 3% are older cases. And this chart indicates a breakdown of complaints that we receive from the community. The chart reflects that we receive a lot of complaints from males. And then this the analysis reflects that we receive a lot of complaints from males, and then we most of those cases are appeal cases. And then for the past financial year, we've been dealing with a systemic investigation on appeal, and that matter has been finalized. This chart indicates the top portfolios of complaints received against provincial, national, and local governments. This is just a sample. So I'm finalizing this program one, and then I've showed our achievements in regards to the statistics and the achievements in regards to the set objectives for that for program one. Program two deals with executive management. The objective of this program is to provide strategic direction and improve internal and external communication to inculcate a common vision and improve profile of the organization. The outcome of this program is to improve service delivery to stakeholders, to ensure that there's smooth timeout flow of accurate information to all OPP staff, and also to increase awareness and knowledge of the official mandate of the Office of Participation. The highlight of this program was that we finalized the think tank process manual, the annual report was tabled timeout in Parliament, we adopted communication strategy, and we issued to the external newsletter. Program 3 deals with our outreach program. The objective of this program is to empower the people to knowledge by resulting in visibility of the services of the OPP. The outcome of this program is improved stakeholder perception, cooperation, and accessibility of OPP services. The highlight of this program was that we have adopted and we are currently implementing the outreach strategy. We have conducted 320 information sessions throughout the country, and we have jointly collaborated with other institutions, including other chapter 9 institutions, 343 workshops. We have successfully launched the mobile office of the public protector in 3 provinces, in KZN, in Kopo, and KCK. The other achievement in regards to this program is that we have conducted 297 clinics throughout the country, and then we have managed to reach out to 53,307 communities. And the other objective of this program is that we have a presence in all 9 provincial offices. We have 6 regional offices, and then we're going to establish 3 more regional offices during this current financial year. And then in regards to the already established regional offices, for example, in Cape Town, we have our regional offices in, office in George. That George serves areas like Beaufort West, like Naisna, and Kuala. And then in Northwest is the biggest provincial office in our office, because we inherited the previous tip of the office. And then we have 3 regional offices. We are servicing clinics in Glasgow, Potchefstroom, and Zeerust. So we have really reached out to all communities. And then the fourth program is one for corporate support services. The objective of this program is to achieve and sustain an efficient and effective corporate support services that is compliant with legislation. The outcome of this program is improved service delivery. The highlight of this program is for 3 consecutive years, we received unqualified audit reports with no mentor of emphasis. And then we also managed to have the security management strategy. And then we also implement, we are in the process of implementing our risk management strategy. And we are compliant with all relevant legislation. And then again, in regards to the program, we have a fully functioning HR department. And in regards to our employment equity profile, I know that some errors are being improved, and we've already put mechanisms to rectify that, because in terms of the target, we're supposed to have 2% of people with disability. We only have one. We are short with 1%. And then in regards to women in senior management, we are left with 15% to reach our target. And we've already made there's a draft recruitment and selection strategy. They are going to make sure that we comply with our existing plan. And then now I'm going to hand over to Zane to deal with the budget, and then I'll deal with successful and challenges.
Thank you, Shirley. Thank you, Chair. Just want to go through the budget, and then going through the budget, I want to start with an overview of our prior year.
We don't have this documented.
Thank you, Chair. In looking at our budget, I think it's important that we look at the past, and we prepared our table showing our budget, a budget overview of the budget allocations we had received over the last 6 years. If you look at our budget, we started from a base of 29.371 million, and that was almost doubled 5 years later to 67.784 million. We've shown the graph, also shows the breakdown of that increase, the percentage increases. What that relates to is that at the end of 2001-2002, the OPP had a national office, and we had representativity in five provinces. At the end of 2006-07, we had our national office and representativity in all nine provinces, with 17 offices in total, excluding our national office. And I think if we just go to the next slide, please, John. This is graphically represented. You'll see the steep incline in our budget over the last few years. And this shows just the percentage increase, the year-on-year percentage increase. So for the MTF period, taking 2006-2007 as our base year, we received quite a nice increase in the last financial year, 16% increase, and that goes to 10% in 2008-09, that's further 10% increase in 2009-10, and a 6% increase in 2010-11. Just a brief overview in terms of this. The reason for these increases, in terms of 07-08, the large 16% increase still reflects the growth phase which our office is going through. There were two additional regional offices that were open or in process of being opened in this last financial year. The further 10% increases over the 08-09 and 09-10 financial year is a period where we really have to stabilize our infrastructure. I think Charles will probably talk later about our IT infrastructure that needs to be addressed. In terms of our financial policies, we've grown quite a bit over the last 5 years, and this period will ideally, there's a slight increase in spend to try and stabilize our infrastructure. In terms of 2010-11, the increase is considerably smaller. It's merely an inflationary adjustment. These figures will have to be reworked based on the new inflation targets and figures that have been provided. Just go to the next slide. The next slide shows our allocation per program, the budget allocation per program. You'll see we spend a considerable amount of money, approximately was supposed to make some 57% on our investigations. That's our core function. We spend a further 4% on outreach. We spend 12% on the executive. And those three programs make up our core function. So roughly 70% of our budget is spent on investigations and our core. The 27% that's spent on corporate services, this includes the IT infrastructure that to support our core function and HR, finance and supply chain. So a large portion, a fairly substantial portion of our budget is spent directly on our core function.
Thank you. I'm going to deal with the successes for the previous financial year. The main success is the achievement of the unqualified audit report, and then we have achieved both of our strategic objectives that we have set. We have issued quarter reports to different organs of state, which are accepted and in the process of being implemented. We have reached out to many communities through our program. Then our challenges expected in regard to the budget. The public protector falls under the Department of Justice Board. And then this creates an unfortunate perception that the office is not independent as defined in the Act. And then the public protector also provides that the public protector shall determine his salary. But in order for him to do that, he must enter into long negotiations. And then this poses a lot of problems in our office. There will be some morale, sometimes it delays the implementation of the OEC. And then the other thing is that because of this unfortunate situation, we experience a high turnover of our investigators because there are other government departments and institutions which pay more than our entry level for investigators. And then we would like to appeal to Parliament that this salary disparity calls for an intervention by Parliament so that we should try to mitigate this high turnover by our legal staff. And then the main challenge again, which staff will also further support that to our IT system. Because insufficient support from CISA, which is the only approved implementing information agent. This delays service delivery, delays the speediness of finalizing our cases. I'm going to hand over to Charles to explain about the IT challenges and then the status, how we are going to mitigate these. Thank you.
The ATA can get an analysis of the infrastructure environment. And then as part of the mandate was basically to implement the case management system, which is quite core for the operations of the office. But now the analysis actually shown that the infrastructure that we had at the SM office was very much adequate, so we needed to refresh to get new technologies in. So we did that also within the early beginning of the year. Once we had that in place up and rolling, we approached CISA, it was early August, to assist us in procuring, getting a service provider to implement the case management system. Unfortunately, for some reasons, we actually faced with challenges with CISA because they initially wanted to own up to develop the system themselves. But with my analysis looking into the expertise that they have in the house was quite a challenge. That took for some time because they actually considered a sort of a forum that will actually assist the office in developing the system. And then again, that's why the delay from their side was coming in terms of providing us the proper service. But we managed for some reason to develop the right channels with the one individual within the CISA. And once we have done that, we discussed the functional requirements and we gave them to so that they can issue a tender. For some reasons, that was also delayed because I think I'm told that they were trying to constitute also a consulting arm that will actually do a review of our requirements. And then with that taking long, we actually intended to escalate the matter up. We approached the CEO to follow suit on that. Noting that we actually trying to escalate the matter up, we approached, as I said, late in the year. for that tender to be issued. All these are actually placed on the papers, and then we received about 8 submissions, of which 3 were disqualified, and then 5 were headed up to our office of the protector. That of which, as a business, ourselves, IT, and then some of the end users, we sat and in supply chain, of course, did an analysis and an evaluation of the 10 submissions. We tried also to get someone from CETA who can assist us in doing the evaluation. For some reasons, they refused to citing that and, they used to be involved in those processes, and for some reasons, there were questions that were raised afterwards. So we went ahead and then did an evaluation and submitted to CETA. For some reasons, also, the department and supply chain within CETA was going under structuring that also delayed the appointment of the service provider. Hence, and also the December holidays and meet sometimes around early January, mid-January, whatever. They came back from holidays, so that we were pushing by all means so that we can get someone appointed at the early beginning of the year, hoping that by this time we have something that's actually up and running. That's the case in the system. And then also with the delays, we also attempted once more to escalate the matter with the actually the public protector intervene. It was when that we got a response from CETA, this was sometime around February, with the actually citing that we can appoint the recommended service provider. Fortunately, we have had several meetings with the service provider, that is a consortium that included the NAMIC Technologies and NMIPB for the change management and also development. Likely yesterday, we actually had a kickstart meeting for the development of the case management, which we actually set date for the development for the actual kickstarting of the project as the 2nd of June. We're anticipating having the project up and running around late September, early October. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Just to highlight on the IT, why we thought it's necessary to brief you on it. The problem with our cases and why we had to go for file inspection, we realized that our cases were overinflated and we're not sure that those figures are accurate. And that's why we appointed a consultant who conducted an investigation, our internal auditor centrally, conducted an investigation and concluded the investigation, and they issued a temporary report, an interim report. And it does show that there was indeed a problem, and we are waiting for the final report, and we are sure that we will include that in our final report. The second issue that I want to clarify is that the additional regional offices that will be opened will be, I think one will be in the Free State, that is Twakwa. The other one will be in Newcastle, and the other one will be in Upington. And we are saying we launched mobile offices in the three provincial offices. One may ask, and what about the other offices? The purpose was that it was a pilot project which was funded by the European Union. They chose what in their view was the most poorest and rural areas, and they chose the three provinces. What we'll be doing then will be, and we'll roll over these processes to other provinces this year in this financial year, depending on the availability of funds, because mobile offices assist us in reaching out each and every village, because these vehicles move from village to village. So that maybe in a period, over a period of 2-3 years, we shall have reached each and every individual in the country, because part of the challenge that we face is that very few people know the existence of the offices of Chapter 9 institutions, and in this case, the office of the public protector. I thought I needed to just add flesh to that, and we stand ready to answer any questions.
Are we done?
We are done.
Thank you.
I can only add that it's not 2 years.
It's 35 years that we have been unqualified for.
Oh, not three, but five. Thank you very much, TP and the team, and this presentation. you know, when a unit adheres to those financial requirements and all those stuff, you are disarming members. And, yeah. Colleague? Here we are. The office is ready to take our questions. In the earlier presentation, I started from here. Now I'm talking from that end, coming this way. Let me start there with the Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chairperson. I knew this was going to be very quick and serious. Forewarned. But purely, see, and honestly, we must thank very much the presentation. It is short, it is exact, it is frank and honest and everything. And I'm only going to have a few sweetheart questions. The first one will only be on cases of own initiative. How do you identify them? Just through newspapers or the concern when it comes to media, because media is not always that reliable, that's my own opinion. Then how do you identify them? Is it people that is writing into you, but only Mr. Rao? How do you manage that? The second one will be, I've noticed that, what is it, on the government, on page 70, the government employees pension fund. There is a lot of cases there. And it goes hand in hand with Home Affairs. That also has a lot of cases. The government employees fund is that fraudulent people that have died and then they still submit IDs fraudulent IDs because with the government employees fund every year they extend a form that you have to fill in and verify at the police station. So where does this fraud, what does it entail? The next one would be all departments have this, what do they call it, efficiency saving strategy. And we can try to cut down on S&Ts and all of that. I don't see anything in here on that. Do you have it? Then also as you say, you are almost with all your infrastructure almost in place. And do you think it's time to get a replacement strategy there so that you don't have in 1 year to replace everything? You can replace them over a couple of years. The last one will only be here, as they were really covered both of the ways. But the rural areas is not the only rural areas. There's also urban presidential nodes, like in the Western Cape, Khayelitsha. And you know, it's very difficult getting in there with no road infrastructure. Sometimes even maybe the urban areas transport, which people are far from the center. Your mobile units, will you spread them to these areas? You try and cover. And then, I mean, I don't see the need to identify poor areas. These presidential areas were identified as the poorest of the poor. So that's the only change. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That was the Honorable Mac. Can I now recognize the Honorable Museki?
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with Comrade Mark that this department
now, this entity must be commended for the excellent work around the financial management. Having said that, Chairperson, on Program 1, 34 equipment, my own initiative investigation conducted, 11 finalized. Now, the remaining, how far are you with the remaining? 11 are finalized. How far are you with the remaining? In your view, how long will this take you to finalize? Because that is important if they are not finalized, because you might experience that loss. I don't think you want to find yourself there. Because once you get a bad luck, then it will become bigger and bigger. The paragraph has survived. 40 reports issued to different organizations, holding and all recommendations were accepted and being implemented. I believe one of the things that you're supposed to do is to follow up, to continuously monitor if all your recommendations are implemented. How effective is your monitoring mechanism around that? What do you do when the department does not implement? What action do you take? You might not, your action might not be well, what could be your action could not, might not be taken very serious by a department. And where do you go for remedial or recourse if the department is not acting on what you recommend? Chairperson, I think it's the same paragraph, same program where you talk about just statistics of 2,000 complaints of the finalized and carried over. Just looking at this graph that you have presented to us, it looks like your head office is having a lot of complaints, followed by Eastern Cape, Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Cape, and then South. Is that the case in terms of this plan? And in your view, if that is correct, why are so many complaints going to the head office whilst you have provincial office? Is it because it is the urban communities that are complaining, or what is it today? You preempted the CFO, the question of Northwest. Eh? It's for the biggest office, because you inherited. The spider of the you're talking about the beginning. Or, yeah. The clinic is very much a mobile that you're running in different area, or it's just a periodic office that you're running in those areas. And just for you to indicate to us if those rural communities do now appreciate the work that you're doing. Do they come in numbers when you're there to raise some of the issues? I know there was a case in Supinstar. But the case there about the maladministration of the community fund and other management. And every time I go to that area, the community there, or the community structures will be saying, this government is keeping our report that was compiled by public protection. And the premier's office and others are not giving out that report. Maybe that relates to what I raised earlier on about your monitoring, your follow-up, if the departments are not doing what you recommend. Can you shed light on that? How? Because there's a huge complaint that the senior office is not releasing that report. Just for you to tell us if you're following that matter up. Mabopane, it used to be part of North West. Eh? What is it now? Part of North West, or the cross border thing is finished. Right? We don't have cross border anymore. And I have also worked in those areas, Bohamanskral and so on. All the government offices that used to service the communities there when they were in the Northwest, they are now in Gauteng. Now your rural communities there, Moretzila and so on, they are struggling with the service. Have you ever received any complaint like that? Because there are literally no offices in the Northwest that are supposed to service those communities in those areas. Those offices have gone to Gauteng. I mean all the offices. Has this matter come to your attention? If you raise it with the relevant authorities. Yeah, the other matter of interest, Chairperson, is your cases that are older than a year. I think I must agree once again that you're doing a wonderful job. But what do you do with matters like this? You continue to follow how long it takes after a year for you to complete cases like that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Lim Seki.
I think that we noted that's Honorable Moseki. I can see the CEO is itching to respond. Now you get the chance, maybe just relax. I can see she's itching, but she can't wait. Yeah, I'm talking, no. Then I'm going to have one. You remind me of, not what Mutek was saying, you remind me of some interpretations that have had wrong meanings. One judge said it's so difficult, for example, so there was one guy who wanted to explain to the boss that he wants to go home to perform those rituals after his father passed on. After the given period, in our culture, it's some more than 1 to 6 months, but some of us is 12 months. A matter of more for 12 months before we do those rituals that she cleans again. Now, this guy didn't know how to explain the post to go, wow, like, what didn't. He said to the post, can I go, please? I'm going to undress my mother. Went to address my mother. Who will go with him? So, can your sisters, how do I say this in the night? Not to go and address my mother. Yeah, that was the Honorable Moseki. Can I recognize the Honorable West?
Thank you, Jay. Also like to thank the public protector for their presentation here today. And seeing that everybody's talking about their provinces, we do that, you see, in the NCOP. I'd like to say what a wonderful province I've come from, the Free State, because right here on the presentation slide number 4, chart 4, it says Free State complaints, number of complaints older than 1 year, zero. No, which is marvelous, of course. And even better still is if you go to chart 1, you will observe the Free State complaints finalized. That's on that graph with the green. More complaints were finalized than complaints received. You see the yellow is lower than the green. Now, I see that at the top it says complaints received, finalized, and carried over. But if there are more settled or finalized, they received, then this must have been cases that were taken over from the preceding period, 2006-2008. But it shows you what a wonderful province we are. Now, there's two major things, though. particularly in my office. The one is, I see there is a case that's still outstanding. It was reported that 40 cases were finalized last year, and all 40 departments responded and cooperated nicely. But I see here in this book here, it says here, 90% of all cases where recommendations are made are accepted and in the process of being implemented. The only exception was the recommendation made to the Premier of the Free States, and a report was written to the legislature to take appropriate action. This matter has also been resolved with the Speaker. So that's very bad. Now, there's one outstanding, and we'd like to just know a little bit more about that. I think I have seen something in the paper, but I forget exactly what it was about. Then, of course, that is the one thing. The other thing is that I'd like the public protector to protect the people in the Free State is against our rugby team, which plays so bad. So you're going to get lots of complaints about that. So, but our soccer team's doing well, but you'll have to protect that rugby watches from our team. Then I've got a few other things I'd like to know. If you have a look in your chart 7, it was a chart 7, maybe I'm looking at this chart incorrectly. I just need a little bit of substantiation here. Could be in the yellow. It's also a graph form. Percentage of complaints. This is breakdown of the top 11 portfolios. Complaints against national, provincial, local government taken from investigations and finalized 2007-08. Then it could be in the yellow. Percentage of complaints against portfolio found to be substantiated. Sample taken from third and fourth quarter. Then in the green is percentage of complaints against portfolio compared to the total number of complaints finalized. Now, if you look there, it looks to me, looking at this graph, the two worst offenders are, for instance, the Department of Health, the name, one. The yellow graph is quite high. And let's take Home Affairs. And yet the green for the finalization seems to be so low. Why would it be those two departments are so bad? And then yet one that I would have thought really would have been a lot of problems is, for example, municipalities.
Yeah.
And you see there it's nearly, it's not so bad compared to some of the other departments. That's very interesting. Then I see your department, sir, or the public protector had problems with turnover of your staff. 20% or 19%, I know it's here somewhere. Who is coaching all your staff? Where are they going to? I see, because I see a lot of resigned. They weren't dismissed or whatever. They positively resigned, and I did see here they're moving for higher salary. Who is the main culprit? Who is taking all your staff? And what do you do then once you're approaching staff or you've got quite a relatively high turnover? Where are you recruiting new persons from? Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much. I will make one that she starts losing notes. Honorable Leroux.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd also like to add my voice. Excellent presentations today. We have a member of our committee called Mr. Mzizi.
Yeah.
Now, when he gets a chance, he asks as many questions as he can possibly ask, and he usually then takes all your questions away from you. Now, I think the same thing is now like flu, it's spreading all along the line. Now, I'll speak to only one question, yeah. On page 64 of your report, you note the challenges, number 7, but then in 7.1.4, you say the situation calls for an intervention by Parliament to ensure that the OPP and indeed all other Chapter 9 institutions can function as independent bodies. Now, what type of intervention, sir, do you have in mind?
Thank you very much, sir. That was the Honorable Leroux, and I recognize the poor Mami and
thank you, Chairperson. My name is not a question, it's a comment. I just want to comment the department. And it's because 56% is women, that's why this department is functioning so high. That is my comment, Chairperson. Thank you. Keeping up, ladies.
Oh, oh. Oh, no, no, you deserve it, TP, you deserve it. No, when I trust you, this is good. This is very good. I saw in one of the slides that the people who are complaining more are male. We'll come to that, we'll come to that. Hello, meiosis.
Chaperton, thank you very much. I thought Manyanda would, Honorable Manyanda would start with the fact that she has been whispering to me that this committee has got only one woman. She has got a problem of having only one woman. She has been complaining here in relation to what she has just said, 66. I must also commend the Public Protector's Office for the work it is doing for our people. And I think it's a relief that we have got the Public Protector. Especially those that have got access to the Public Protector. The first thing that was said was that because of your name, people tend to report all their cases to you. Really, this is inconvenient, not only to yourselves, but also to the public. Because when we have got to attend to people who otherwise should have gone to another institution, that is time consuming. Also for those people that they have got to start with you and then that thing that was called pillar to post, then you tell them that you refer them to another institution. That causes a lot of inconvenience, and I've seen your outreach program seek to address that. Now, in pursuance of seeking to address the outreach program, what partnerships are you developing, are you forming out there? Say, I thought my counselor down there, Honorable Mac, would ask this question. As to whether the constituency office, in terms of your education, public education, which is part of the outreach program, whether you are also using the constituency offices to spread the word that these are the functions and the services that are rendered by the Office of the Public Protector, so that people can distinguish between the Public Protector and the other institutions that are more or less doing performing related functions. That is developing partnerships. To what extent are you developing partnerships on the ground, not at the level of the Human Rights Commission and the other commissions that are there. Secondly, in terms of salary competitiveness, with which organ of state would you compare yourself? Or are your lawyers, the lawyers that you engage, the lawyers that are employed by the Office of the Public Protector, salaries comparing favorable with the salaries of other state attorneys? Or is there a disparity between the salaries that you are offering your own lawyers, that is your own attorneys that are there? Do they compare favorable with the other state attorneys? Related to that is the fact that you are faced with a budgetary challenge. You say one of your challenges, the first one is the budget. Is it as a result of a misappreciation of the critical task you have to accomplish, or is it just a misunderstanding of what exactly the public protector has to do and the public has to benefit from the services of the public protector? Because from our side, we feel that the public protector, previously known as an ombudsman, was it an ombudsperson or an ombudsman? No, it was an ombudsman. That was a misnomer. An ombudsperson is performing functions that are indispensable in our view, and therefore the budget that is attached to that should be commensurate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the Honorable Manyosi. Maybe let me end these two questions or so from the side and see how it can go. I think you have been congratulated for a job well done, and we can only hope other entities can copy from you. Maybe in future I must make sure that when you appear yourself, the legal aid board and one entity in the corporate service, to invite some of these departments to come in and just sit and just sit and listen and copy from you. I think next time we're going to do that. If we're not here, we'll just advise that those who will be taking over from this committee to do that. So this is commendable. This is enough. Very good. But maybe let me start from this question, and I think this will assist in clarifying other issues. There is a perception out there. I thought Mama Yossi will start from there again. This perception that the office is government friendly. What are your comments? So I don't want to unpack it, but just, I think it's a statement enough. They said you are government friendly. Now there is, Charles, in adding to what was raised by the TP and Shelley as well, the IT challenge and the kind of responses you are getting from let me tell you that the Department of Defense, Department of many departments, at some point they even say to hell with CETA, we'll do our own, they're doing it. And those departments came running to us to complain that now we've been overlooked by our departments, that they don't buy whatever through us, you know. But even in Pretoria, the Disaster Management Office in Pretoria, they said we had enough of this CETA thing. We're not going to buy our own thing, we're going to do our thing. You know, to query us and query us because they are so inefficient. When you said about CETA, I was looking at you and said, I wish you all the luck. That structure really is there. So we're not surprised if you raise this concern. But I'll start out there at the end of now. Maybe let me hear your comments. Now, I know this, you reported about this person who was suspended at later but are there other occurrences of members who are looting the state and method? If yes, how many, and if they are there, in terms of the random sense, how much are you spending in terms of this kind of movement. Now, some other departments, they are culprits of fiscal dumping. Some of them will do that simply because they want to clear their name, to say they're able to spend all their allocation. I just hope you are not a culprit of this kind of practice, where you target from December, January, February, that you make that ready, you spend as much as you can. I want you to be honest. Be honest. Now, I know you'll unpack it as in your spending trends per month. If you're failing per month, then can I get it per quarter, your spending trend? Now, I thought that Shelley will talk about vacancies. Vacancies. I saw the slide talk about the turnover and stuff, but can you talk about vacancies in your unit, in the office of the PC? Yeah, PP, before you go, I want to hear the office there. It could be an office in Bush Park, you know. Yeah, I need an office in Bush Park.
Yeah.
No. I mean, you're a young office in Bush Park. That's not where you must respond to us. Yeah, questions put there, I think, yeah. No, you can see this fit up question because we're doing so well, you know. So we don't want to be so harsh to people who are working. It's so nice, you know, when you receive mm-hmm. this kind of presentation, you know, I mean, you are so relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you were here too, so I can see how departments work. Some of them were to share them away because the figures on tally, that plan is not accurate. It just they came to lie to us. We were to share them away. Yeah, PP, we are all here.
Thank you, Chair. I will, and thanks very much for the comments that you made about us. We will obviously inform our staff, and in particular, we'll inform our women. Parliament is saying about them. I think I will leave some questions, and you'll pick out them. Which ones to answer. The first one deals with own initiative, whether or not, where do we get this own initiative? Do we buy newspapers or what? It's yes and no. Yes, there are matters which come into the newspaper. Take ESCOM, for instance. We first heard of it by reading in the newspaper. But also experiencing it, because we had a load shedding. So what I want to say is that we analyze it. We don't just conduct an investigation before we have satisfied ourselves that there is concrete evidence suggesting that there is a maladministration or any form of abuse of power. We have had matters where there is you can see the newspaper hide. We definitely avoid those because in any newspaper you'll find that there's a lot of newspaper hide. And if we were to chase each and every story as it appears in the newspaper, we wouldn't even have the budget to run after those ones. So we select in such instances. complaints about government employee, pension fund, home affairs, why are there so many, what are these cases all about? We were hoping in our media release tomorrow we're going to publicize one of
times when it is paid over, it is inaccurate, and etc. One of the reasons why we conduct systemic investigation is because a number of similar cases emanate from one particular department. That's what informs us that there is a systemic problem. And once we identify that, we conduct an investigation. The report is almost finalized. It's going to be publicized very soon. We're hoping to release it tomorrow, but there are some amendments in the report, and we're not releasing it immediately. It is those type of reports that we are receiving. It's not literally the stealing of the money or whatever, you know. It is the delays and inaccurate figures that are paid to the people. It is quite traumatizing, as you note from the report, because some of the people, the husbands have died, and pension takes years, houses are repossessed. Meanwhile, there is money, and it's just this bureaucracy that is going on. And the situation might even got serious because some municipalities contracted their own pension funds and caused people to resign from the government pension fund into municipalities. Some of these pension funds, I'm afraid, I'm not sure if they are all aligned. So that problem is simmering. There was a time, for instance, where even the Minister of Finance and the President at some stage tried to intervene between this. So the matter is still, the municipality and the government pension fund is still a matter which has not been resolved. So it's a bigger problem. But we only dealt with the issue of delays and whatever, but we have not managed to break through on this one of the municipality and the government pension fund, which is more scary. Home affairs, it's mainly the issue of IDs. I mean, you read and see a number of people there. You wake up, you're married to so and so, and maybe you want to apply for an ID for your child or a birth certificate for your child. You're told, no, but another child will do the same. You have registered this child. Whose child is it? I'm sure you'll see that Home Affairs does have a lot of IDs and what have you. Now the question of refugee also comes in there. I mean, the number that comes into the country, I'm not sure if Home Affairs is able to deal with them, to record them properly. So some of the cases that comes to us from these refugee camps, that they are not receiving the minimum international standard treatment that is supposed to be meted out to the people. So it is those type of matters that we have. It's not necessarily fraud related. I'm jumping number three. Then we'll deal with the efficiency saving strategy. And the IT will go to Charles. The issue around urban and presidential nodes is an area where we should establish a clinic. So I think you're correct in saying that, Honorable Mac. Even when we launched our mobile clinic, I remember in the Eastern Cape, it was the Sikisiki, and in KwaZulu-Natal, the name which is difficult, I can't remember what is the name of that area. But it's also a presidential node, and then in Limpopo, we launched it in France. It's also a presidential node. So when we launch, as we unfold, we are going to follow those modern points, because we also we are also guided by the presidential speech, and we take it and analyze it, and our outreach will be unfolding towards those areas. It's only that money is slow in coming, because people need services. And the agency of this will be seen now that we have got this spontaneous uprising blamed on service delivered. To think of only 11,000 people coming to report cases in our office, that tells you that we have not reached out to people. And we cannot condone what people are doing now, but there are certain areas where service delivery is lacking indeed, and that's why other people who cannot see too far end up thinking that foreigners are coming to take or are competing for serious issue, this outreach program, and we are hoping that we should be able to move out to the people, to utilize or to teach the people that before you run into the street, before you damage the little infrastructure that has been built, at least there are bodies like us where you can first put up your complaint, but we are not yet there. The bigger challenge. The issue around this matters where we have finalized cases, the remaining one is true. I'm not sure if I can give you a precise time whether we can finish some of these remaining cases, because some of them are a bit complicated. I remember it took us more than 3 years to complete the appeal cases, because you know you have to deal with cases all over, the number of prisons and what have you, they are just long and complicated, and sometimes the information is not available. But maybe we can give you an estimate on a written estimate on that question, so that then we can tell you more or less by when do we think we can finalize some of these cases that are referred to in Program 1, so that we can give you a fuller projection of when do we think we can finalize it, and if there are hiccups, then we can give a much more detail. A good question is one that you're asking about our follow-up mechanism, that is monitoring. What action do we take when the department does not react to our recommendation? Where do we go? Well, fortunately, we can say right now almost 99.9% of our recommendations have been implemented and are being implemented. I think what makes this possible is that after an investigation, we send a report to the department, a draft report, to say, look, this is our draft recommendation. Are there any difficulties that you foresee or that you think will prevent you from monitoring this implementation? If it's budgetary, then we're going to write it in the report to Parliament to say, seemingly the department needs a budget. And in so doing, then we interact with the department, because our approach is not that we must always be adversary. And maybe that's why other people will think, no, we are friendly to the government. We are not necessarily friendly. If you look into our hand, we're not there to be adversaries. We are there to also assist the government. I mean, some departments have changed their regulation because of our recommendation. We are there to make sure to point out the wrongs and to ask the department to recommend, to amend. The fact that we only have the Premier of the East Free State as the only one who did not want to implement tells you a big story. Even there now, with a new speaker there who came in, that's why now they have taken the matter, they are beginning to implement our recommendations. And we do that without necessarily confrontation, because we are not adversaries. Meanwhile, we are not saying we are going to allow wrong things to take place in the department, but we find a better mechanism to make sure that at the end of the day, each one of us benefits. I will leave the next question, which deals with statistics, that the acting CEO will deal with that. The question of whether a clinic and a mobile is the same. Maybe a mobile clinic is actually more feasible, let me put it that way. In other words, we even have this mobile car that we bought. A car is mobile in any way. Which we bought designed to be like an office. We moved from one village to the other. But the clinic, maybe it's the use of the name, we can call it a visiting point, because those are areas where maybe we go once a month and then come back. If there are people, we'll continue. areas you find that we don't find anybody, we don't continue. For instance, we had, by the end of last year, we had more than 73 visiting points where I would visit. We're trying to reach out to the people in that manner. And whether or not people appreciate our coming, do they come when we're at this visiting point? What we do when we visit these areas, we take statistics. If there is no interest, we don't continue to go to a place where people don't have interest and maybe they don't have problems. And we change to other areas because the challenges are so many and in other areas that you cannot afford just to go to a place where you don't have interest. And what we do normally, we send out our outreach facilitator who popularize that on date X we're going to visit to that point so that we make sure that people are aware we are coming. the issue about this particular report, although I don't remember the name of the farm or the village, I know about this matter. I was talking to the people in my office in the Northwest. In this case, we have not issued a report at the office. I think we were approached to assist them to force the premier to issue a report or to give them out a report that was issued. And there appears to be some difficulties with the premier. I still have not gotten what is the problem with the premier. Why does he not want to release this report? And it's a matter which I think I would want to respond in writing because we're equally concerned about that one. Because we know of this particular community. So we will write to you, sir, and let you know exactly the details. Where are we in respect of this matter in the Northwest? Mabopane, as an office, we made it report to the national office, as you can see in the statistics, standing alone, because it was under Northwest. It was just logistical that we put it under housing, because they had to go to our offices in Mafikeng. It was too costly. Meanwhile, we have got offices in Pretoria, but it still, as an office of the public protector, it still services the same area as it was servicing there. So it's only that when you want stationery, you must just drive to Pretoria and collect your stationery instead of driving another 4 hours to Mafikeng for the thing that you can get in less than 30 minutes. We have not changed the jurisdictional area that Mabopane as an office covers. I am, though, aware that a number of departments have been transferred to Houghton. That is an area which we have never received a complaint that people are now worried that, say, other departments now fall under Houghton, but one would have thought that the fact that they are in Houghton should not affect the jurisdictional area. It may just be logistical arrangement. But if there are such complaints, I think we will appreciate if that can be raised with us. Cases that are older than 2 years, what do we do with them? There are many reasons why a case sometimes takes much longer to complete. I'll give an example of the Department of Justice. You'll see justice also constitutes a department which has got so many cases outstanding. There you find that the record is lost. For instance, it's an appeal case. You go there, you know, the concepts get lost very quickly. I don't know whether it's a coincidence or what has happened. Those are the characteristics of cases. And the many cases which falls under that category is where records are lost. And you cannot move even if you want to move. And some prisoners sometimes even get released before they've lodged their appeal, because when the record is lost, they must reconstruct the record. I remember we are busy with one in Polokwane. They are trying to reconstruct the record which is lost. So we don't throw the case away simply because it is more than 2 years, but there will be circumstances that are causing us to still hold on to that particular case. But our target now has moved from 1 year to less than 6 months. Because we see now we are trying to finalize in 6 months. But then we would allow those cases which are much longer. With their own circumstances, you can't do otherwise. If they say the case is lost, what are you going to do about it? You just have to follow up with the department until they produce. But that's the area where you find a lot of problems. Yeah, there is, Mr. Webb, you spoke about the premier's report in the Gazette. The case here involves the appointment of the Youth Commission. I think there was a delay in the appointment of the Youth Commission because there was a fight between the Premier and the Finance Committee and to an extent and the Speaker, with the result that the two were bickering. And in the process, the system suffered. And when the Premier did not get cooperation from the Committee and the Speaker, she went on her own and appointed a youth commission without authorization from the committee and without authorization from the legislature. And we said no, but it's invalid because it is a statutory provision that you must get a recommendation from the committee. But seeing that this matter has been outstanding for a long time, we said, why don't we get the committee to ratify that decision? Because we don't want the Youth Commission to be disbanded at this late stage. So what they are doing now is to try and get the committee and the legislature to ratify the appointment of that Youth Commission. So we are in the process of finalizing that. So Shelley will deal with the question around the chart number 7 to substantiate that. Question around the turnover. Whatever they claim. Turnover, the staff, who's poaching and where are these people going? Let me take the flank of self praise is no recommendation. But one other thing is we have had people who leave our office horizontally. Horizontally. In other words, not for a higher post or whatever. Because our staff, most of them, they go through training. And they are qualitative. We have had situations where people just go on a horizontal. But at the same time, there are quite a number of them who move. For instance, if you look at the NPA, their salaries are much higher than any other government institution which has legally qualified people. And with the budget that we have, for instance, we can't compete with NPA. And when you are in a situation like that, then you are in a predicament. And in some departments, even the ratings, take for instance, you might find that your CFO in our office is at the rank of a director, and then you go into another department, it's at the rank of a chief. So it is that type of inequality that exists that causes people to move, particularly the young and the restless. They move. They want money. I mean, I will also move. And unfortunately, that is the trend. But you will know that at some stage in the past, the Department of Justice was asked to try and design a strategy for the equal payment of legally qualified people, which they did not manage to do until now when they came with this OSD, which came out of the bargaining chamber, said all people who are legally qualified must be paid equally. And we are in the process of trying to implement that one. But the setback is the Minister of Finance has made it clear that I'm not going to release more money. And it places us now in a difficulty because our staff, for instance, are aware that this is a result of the bargaining chamber. It was agreed there. And our staff do not belong to any bargaining chamber because of the nature of their work. And we are bound by the decision that is taken in the bargaining chamber. So when you already have this situation where they say, no, you can try what you are trying, we're not going to as other departments are concerned, we know that they do have a bigger budget, which we do have to roll over something like 400 million. Even if the Minister of Finance says, yes, I'm not going to increase, you won't feel it. But for us, we spend every cent that we have with our present infrastructure, staffing, and the like. We don't know what we're going to do. That was going to actually address this problem. It's something which is worrying us, because we are not going to contain the emotion of staff who knows that it was agreed at the bargaining chamber that this is going to be the position. It would be worse, because they are not going to take it. So it's an issue which we are grappling with, and we will ask for assistance when it comes to the crunch. We are still trying within our means, and if it becomes tough, we will be approaching you. It's good that you asked this question. Challenges and intervention by Parliament, Mr. Leroux. What kind of intervention do you want? This is one of the interventions I've just given you. But that one was said in the context of, you remember we went through a review chaired by Kada Asman. Part of the recommendation, for instance, was that our budget will come through Parliament, so it will be easier for us to make submissions to Parliament. Because right now we don't sit in the Budget Council. We ask the Department of Justice to go and sit on our behalf. We're not there to motivate our budget, so it becomes difficult. So the review has recommended that there should be, for instance, a unit within Parliament that oversees the functioning of all Chapter 9 institutions. Because we appear before this honorable committee, you know, once a year for an hour, and we reckon that is not enough. I mean, you have a lot of ideas. You know, sitting here one day, we get a lot of things. What if we were to sit more than this and more? Or sometimes we have an official who would be visiting us and we talk with problems. And that's the type of intervention that we think Parliament can assist us. And in particular, studying the report of Mr. Kada Asman. Once again, thanks, Menyan, that we appreciate your comment. We'll take it to our people. I'm sure I'll make sure I communicate it, because I've got three very strong women around me here. If I don't do it, I will not survive. Thank you. I don't know whether you want to take this one. Non-jurisdictional. It is not a burden when people come to you and report non-jurisdictional matters. What do you do? You form partnership with NGOs and what? Can I skip it? Maybe the people will want to answer that. Benchmarking, can I leave it for, say, deal with it? Benchmarking, are we benchmarking against lawyers when we pay our staff and whatever? I think you can take that one. And then budgeting constraints, you can take that one as well. I partly responded to it. Not the nice one. Perception of OPP, government, friendly comment. Well, I think we'll live with this forever and ever. Maybe this will go after some 3-4. Yeah. Maybe Parliament. Yeah, after 3-4 Parliaments. Because unfortunately, you see, when you have just come out of a revolution, your first official in the highest post, it's likely to be people who are active in politics, unfortunately. That's why you even have your chief justice as a former UDF activist, your chief deputy, chief justice, it's a former Robben Island. Unfortunately, it is something that we have to live with it for a number of years until now, where you no longer recognize who was active, who was not active in politics. But I will continue to say, look, that is not substantiated by facts. So far challenging that we were more favorable to the ANC. And you can see how difficult that matter is. Until now, we don't even have a judgment. But it's very good because it gave us an opportunity to interrogate the mandate of the Office of the Public Protector. And it will also be interesting that those people who have this view or perception that we are in favor of the government, let them take us on the view. We have a remedy in this country, and it will be interesting because we can then argue this matter, you know, in courts, and sometimes we find it very unpleasant because we'll write a report. You are not happy with the report. You are a member of parliament. We send it to parliament. Instead of people debating the report in parliament, they go out of parliament. So I think it doesn't help us much because we would also benefit out of the people when they debate this report. We can make mistakes, and we stand ready to be corrected, and we will accept any genuine interaction. The CETA matter, I will leave it to the IT person to deal with. Any members who are the looting people. We don't have a lot of direct looting. But recently, I think the past 2 weeks, surprisingly, we have had quite a number of files opened around the tendering system. I think I would also want to do this one and write it because it's becoming more prevalent. You would have seen in Mpumalanga in particular, there is an issue around safety and security, and they've changed that MEC from there. But we have just received a lot of such cases from KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. They are just increasing. I don't know the merits of this case, but if what is said there is true, one would begin to be worried that things are not getting better. So they are still new for me to give any indication of what they look like. I'll prefer to write this one because it's beginning to worry some of us. Shady, you submit the vacancies. I don't know. I don't think we have got the statistics. If you have them, you'll say so. That's your question. The office in Bushbuck, maybe I will see it when my term comes to an end. Maybe it can be the last attempt, you see, because my term comes to an end of next year. So I will try it next year. And I'll try to talk to the people. Thanks. Can I give you to quickly go through your...
Thank you very much, and greetings again, Chairperson and members. Our acting CEO has already elaborated on the reasons why we still have non-jurisdictional matters. But what I will say is that when we do outreach, we also take into account that we ensure that the education is also about what is relevant to the public protector and what is not relevant. What we do, the strategy that we do, if you look at our previous report, you will see that there was a combination in our cases of cases that are non-jurisdictional and those that are relevant. We decided to separate the two. The reason is that we want to deal with the non-jurisdictional promptly as possible so that the complainant has got the opportunity to deal with the matter as urgent as is possible. And we also refer them. Our offices are equipped with all the database of institutions where we can refer the matters. And you can't believe we still sometimes, I know I do have calls where people complain about internal matters, husband doing this and husband, because the public still need information around human rights, their human rights, and also the role of institutions that we have in the country.
and this is why we work with other chapter 9s and other NGOs so that we combine efforts so that our people can get more educated about their rights and be able to report relevant matters to relevant institutions.